Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Run like a wild man.
I watch you struggle and I watch you wrestle with them angels.
Here he is. From Auburn University, Bo Jackson.
The correct Auburn Arena time is 8:49 Central Daylight Time for the last week. Tomorrow, next week, guys, fall back. Your digital audio devices tuned in the Orange and True podcast, harbored by the friendly folks at collegemagnolia.com. Greetings, salutations, Orange and Truthers. You're welcome for that friendly tidbit to turn your clocks back. It's I, Cinecrow2 on Twitter, at Cinecrow on Venmo. That's where you'll find me. Joining me this evening, via the magic of the internet, the rumor monger himself, Ryan Starrett. At Ryan S. Starrett, the S stands for SEC Women's Soccer Tournament Action in Orange Beach, Alabama. To the other side of me,
lovely
giving you the full Fort Payne ASMR that you pay so much money for. Chewing and spitting exactly into his microphone just for you. It's the AU chief.
That's a professional gambler.
Oh, hey now.
Not in this state, you're not.
Well, let's just pretend.
Professional fantasy gambler, basically.
Alleged professional.
Well, I'm not betting anything on TallySite, but they're acting like I bet.
Shout out to TallySite.com for whatever it is they're doing. And
it's fantasy gambling.
Yeah. I think theoretically you could.
There's no money, but they act like you've got money.
No, they have links to actual gambling sites.
Right,
and I think if you were to live in a state where that would be a more progressive state than the Center for Progressive Excellence that is Alabama, you would be able to gamble from there.
That's against the over under. Even though my score prediction was for the Auburn game was under, and I bet the over. But hey, it's fine.
Life's too short to bet the under, Gene.
I got six. I don't know why I have a star next to my name on here though. Active win streak.
Oh yeah, you've won six straight games betting the over under, or six straight weeks betting the over under. In some scenario. All right.
Fantasy game.
Also joining us from Hoops Heaven itself, the doctor is in. Dr. Will McLaughlin of the McLaughlin Group. Greetings.
About that time, gentlemen.
He's joining us. Will's joining us because we're getting to the time of the year where it's okay to really dive in and talk about basketball. And if there's one thing this podcast loves to do, it's talk about Auburn women's soccer. And that's where we're going to start. So, the SEC
that's
women's...
That's what the fans demand.
That's what they demand. Right. We're going to get another great review saying, I absolutely love this show. These guys talk the most about women's soccer. And then they delve into rom-coms. 2 stars.
As I was reminded this weekend, we are a soccer podcast first and foremost.
So. We are.
It's true.
This little soccer team we got at Auburn lost to South Carolina earlier in the year, but get a revenge game in Orange Beach. Now, that is a really good team, South Carolina. But that means Auburn has kind of earned a almost like a bye, if that's the case. Right, Ryan? If they're playing that good of a team first?
Yeah. So Auburn's the 5 seed, South Carolina's the 4 seed. They got away from that early play in on Sunday, which I don't know if you caught either of those games. They both went to a shootout.
Right.
I believe LSU won their game and Florida won their game.
Yeah, so Auburn got what's a single bye, effectively, and right. I believe Arkansas, the number one overall seed, got a double bye.
No.
Oh, okay. Everybody just gets
so there's
buys.
Essentially there's two play-in games, and then because not every team makes it.
That's right. Very similar to baseball. Yeah. Not every team makes this tournament. So
10 teams make it to Orange Beach. There's the 7 through 10 seeds do a play-in game.
Okay. We're a soccer podcast. We all knew that. Ryan was just reminding you, the listener.
And Auburn's the fifth seed in this, correct?
Correct. Ryan said that.
Yeah, so yeah, Auburn's playing four seed South Carolina. If they happen to beat the Gamecocks, they will probably be facing off against Arkansas again. Not an easy task there. But
if you remember,
first win first.
South Carolina won, but it was a the first half. It was a tale of two halves, as Avery Johnson used to say. South Carolina came out and dropped a bomb in the first half and went up 3-0. And then in the second half, Auburn kind of clawed back and scored, got two goals back on them and made it really interesting there in the final couple of minutes, because Auburn had some shots in the last couple of minutes and last couple seconds even to try to get that thing level. So this is Auburn's chance to really get it, to really like try to get a win over this. And like, again, like you said, like, this is the 4-5 matchup. So
toss up.
If they, it's a toss up.
Hey, and Crow, what time is this game at?
Good question, Ryan. That would be at 7:30 PM God's time. 7:30 PM Central. And that would be Central Standard Time. So again,
it's on Tuesday.
You're right. It's going to be Central Daylight Time.
CDST.
Guys, don't set your clocks back till Sunday.
Yeah, it's Sunday that we go back. We fall back.
So it's going to be Sunday morning when you get up for church. You're going to want to have already had those clocks set back.
I panicked on about Friday. I thought, oh man, is this the weekend we fall back? But it's not.
No, man. I'm here to be the timekeeper for the Auburn Nation, Auburn, for the Auburn family. Spelled F-A-U-M-L. Why? F-A-U-M-I-L-Y. There it is.
Yeah. You forgot the...
There's no I in family, G. All right, so...
It's a B, not an I. Family.
Alyssa Melanson is the SEC Defensive Player of the Year.
It's not shocking.
Not shocking. First team All-SEC.
Yeah, you watched her play at all this year. I mean, I think I said it the first week we started talking about soccer. She is the fastest player on the field.
Yeah, that's yet to be challenged. She has been the fastest player on every field that she has been on this season.
Yeah. She could probably play slot receiver for this football team.
She's legitimately blazing. She's blazing fast. Anna Hanick, another first-team All-SECer. 9 goals. You know what? Here's a shock. It's the goalie was not nominated. She has done an incredible job. The fact that she didn't make one of the all SEC teams to me is, it's a travesty. And yeah, I really think that Auburn fans should write a letter to the SEC office. CC at Ryan's S. Starrett with your letter. Maddie Prohaska is her name, and she should be an Auburn all. She should be an all SEC performer this year.
Got 2 more years of her too. She's just sophomore this year.
Right.
Her and Anna had it both.
Nice.
All right.
Good building blocks there.
Here we go, everyone. What you tuned in for. We're going to talk basketball. So, how are we feeling today, Will? How are you feeling if the way you feel about this basketball season was an ice cream flavor, which ice cream flavor would you pick and why?
Oh, wow. I mean, everybody has different likes and stuff. I mean, I'm loyal to the old mint chocolate chip. Very, very excited about this basketball team. There's a lot to like. Just from a depth perspective, you know, there's a lot of new faces on this team, but there's a lot of faces that we've come to know and love over the last year or two. And it's going to be exciting to see how they mold together as one. You know, we've gotten a little bit of a glimpse of them from tip-off at Tumors, the blue-orange scrimmage, and just thinking about all the possibilities with lineups and the players and just the high quality of people that Bruce has brought in, not only, you know, straight out of high school, but in the transfer portal this season. So it's going to be really interesting to see how this season turns out. There's a lot of hope and expectations. I have high expectations for this team. I know most folks do. And the great thing about it is, despite all that, I still feel like Auburn's kind of a little under the radar from a national perspective, unless you're talking to John Rothstein. A lot of people don't really have this team in the top 25, or if they do, it's in the 20s. And I think Auburn's in a really good position to make some noise and surprise some people yet again, which I think Auburn's in the role we all love them to be in. So
yeah. I did enjoy that. It seems like all offseason, Bruce has been talking this team up. You know, he's fairly measured in talking about his team. He's been all about these guys for months now.
And except for after this scrimmage.
His first scrimmage. And yeah. He is dogging them. He's pulling a Nick Saban card. Did not seem too happy at that scrimmage.
Well, it's the thing about it is, too, is that when you play each other versus playing another team, you know, and I think Bruce talked about this, too, it's a lot harder to get up to play against yourselves versus playing other people. I mean, and they've practiced against each other for so long. So when they played in their scrimmage at UAB, I'm sure it was great for them to play, you know, somebody else. And I'm not surprised that they didn't play as well as they did in the scrimmage against UAB. But still, you know, it's encouraging to think, you know, Bruce has talked a lot, like you said, Ryan, about how much he's liked his team. And the fact he's done that early on is a good sign. And, you know, this team's only going to get better. And, you know, this is also with, you know, without Alan Flanagan for most of non-con due to his Achilles injury. You know, once they get him back, they're going to be even better.
Yeah. I'm bummed I didn't get to go to the scrimmage because the Braves were playing, and I was not going to miss that. But it sounds like they did a lot of cool stuff in that scrimmage where they played, and then they just did some sets where they said, okay, this team's up this much, and now go out there and try to win, basically, or try to keep them from winning, kind of thing. So that would have been kind of fun to watch, to see how guys reacted in those scenarios. And it wasn't streamed online, was it?
No, it was not. They had a dunk contest, too, and there's an image of Devin Cambridge attempting a dunk with – I can't remember who it was, but Bruce Pearl was like standing there too, and it's like image of Devin trying to dunk.
Yeah.
And Bruce Pearl great. Standing there like
yes, praying.
Don't land on me. Please don't land on me. What an image. So of course we didn't get to the dunk contest tip off at Timbers because it had rained so much that previous day and early that morning. So the floor was not sustainable for a dunk contest, and no reason for anybody to get hurt.
Yeah, that ended up just being kind of a pep rally more than anything that night.
A chance to let Dylan show off the crowd.
Sure.
And a chance to see
talking about
a three-point contest in which Alan Flanagan shot with one leg.
True.
Well, is Alan Speaking Flanagan the best? Contest. Is he the best one-legged three-point shooter in Auburn history?
He very well could be, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I've
said on this podcast probably 10 times that my basketball theory is improving your third best player is the most important thing. That when your first best player is really good, that's great. But if their first best player is also really good, that cancels it out. Your second best player, a lot of teams have two guys. So your second best player is also canceled out. But if you can improve your third best player, there's a really good chance they don't have a great number three. And so improving your third best player is a way to win a lot of games. Would you say that this team's third best player is the best it's ever been under Bruce? Because however you split that, your third best player on this team is either Walker Kessler, okay, Alan Flanagan, or I guess you could say third best player is Jalen, maybe? But even then, that's disservice to one of those two guys.
Yeah, I would go Jabari, Allen, and I'd put Kessler at three. And that's no disrespect to Walker at all. I mean, it's a 7-1 guy that can shoot threes.
Get a three in the scrimmage.
Yeah. You know, he's going to be able to get – he's more – you know, I think he's going to have a – I mean, he only shot four threes at UNC last year. Just because that's just not the offense that he's susceptible to, you know. That's why he's in Auburn now. So he's like, there's a lot of guys on this team that's capable of having 20, 25 point nights. And I'm not even talking about those three. There's other guys down the list too that can go off and have big games. It's just that's what's exciting about it. There's so many options. There's so many guys on this team that can take over a game if they need to. You know, Jabari, you know, obviously, and I don't think people nationally and even locally are talking about Jabari enough. You know, they came out with the All-SEC team last week, and for some reason they do the thing in this league where they put 10 guys on the first team and 10 on the second team, which is one of those pet peeves of mine that I hate. And somehow Jabari Smith's on the All-SEC second team. And I'm struggling, guys, to think of 10 to 15 guys that are going to be better than Jabari Smith in this league this season. I really am. Like, but I even think Auburn fans are just – I don't think they realize how good Jabari Smith is going to be.
Do they do that because it's by position? Or, like, can they only put so many forwards or so many – like, or are they making a full team?
I will say he is the only freshman on either of those teams.
Yeah, and I think what's going on with that. Yeah, I think if he were a freshman, same exact player, and he went to Kentucky, he'd be on that first team. That's basically all there is to it. And it's not. I'm not saying that because of some conspiracy Kentucky bias. It's just that he's an unknown at this level. But if he's going to Kentucky, they'll expect him to perform at that first team level. It's coming to Auburn, it's flying under the radar a little bit, but they do. I mean, like Ryan said, he's the only freshman on either team there. So I mean, that's something. I'm not going to get too bent out of shape about it. You know, I don't know that it's necessarily disrespect. It's just maybe.
I think he'll be getting plenty of respect when he goes and hangs a 30 on UConn.
Sure. And you know, there's a lot of good basketball players in this conference that's coming back.
Yeah.
So I think that has a lot to do with it too.
I don't know. I don't waste a lot of time on disrespect talk.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't bother me. At the end of the year, after you've played a full season, and then people are like, Jared Harper, he's not first team material.
Yeah, that's dumb.
Like.
But there are certain people on Auburn Twitter who will make it an entire life goal to talk about each week's AP poll in basketball and in football. Right. And it's just it's exhausting.
Yeah, and that was gonna be the next thing. It's like, you know, I get a bit out of shape about it and all, but what do polls and what do preseason polls mean at the end of the day, guys?
Polls do not mean anything in college basketball.
Exactly. Yeah.
It means about as much as the four of us ranking the teams.
It's just fun to see your team with a single digit next to their name, more or less. I do think maybe this could be used to motivate Jabari a little bit. So, I don't think locker room or bulletin board material is the end all be all of anything. But you know, you tell a guy, hey, these people don't think you're that good, so go out and show them every night. But he doesn't seem like the kind of guy that needs that necessarily. So we'll see where he stands at the end of the year, when he's SEC freshman of the year.
I think there's a real chance that this front court is the best front court in college basketball. I mean, it's hard to say that definitively right now.
Sure.
But I can't figure there's too many front courts where you've got a top five recruit, possibly a top five draft pick, a 7-1 guy shooting threes, and then probably the most productive player from your team last year.
Correct me if I'm wrong. He was a top 25 recruit.
He was,
wasn't he?
Yeah.
Kessler.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean,
when Dylan Cardwell and Stretch are your fourth and fifth guys, that's incredible. But we talked about Jalen as being kind of the staple of the team for a while last year. You know, he's probably not going to start much this year, but he's still going to be an incredibly important piece. Just between those three guys, that is incredible talent. And, you know, you can game plan around one of them. You can't game plan around all three of them.
It's true. And I think what we'll probably see is Jalen's going to play almost every position this year. Because I think we're going to want to get him on the court a lot. But, you know, maybe he's not starting. But I don't think that Jabari's going to play 40 minutes every night. So
No need to.
I hope not.
Yeah. Bruce likes to, especially the younger guys. Bruce doesn't like to throw them out there not even 30 minutes.
I would say I wouldn't be shocked if Walker Kessler's averaging less than 22 minutes a game.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, for most of the season,
Auburn's fives almost always average less than 22 minutes.
A game. Yeah,
even when we had Wiley, he was the starter and was averaging 18 a game.
Right.
Anthony or Horace to pick up some of those minutes as well.
Because look at even Wiley, like these guys, these bigger guys, their efficiency numbers almost always go down more minutes they play. Like almost these guys don't get, they're not like running backs where you want them to get stronger as the game gets longer. If that's the case, you want them to play less so that they're there in the fourth or in the
a lot of the body second quarter. Around,
Was he foul prone this last year at all?
No, he was just buried behind some upperclassmen.
Yeah.
Well, it would be hard to say at North Carolina anyway, because he's probably getting the benefit of the doubt as well. Yeah. So
that's the thing about the other Carolina school.
Well, they're both. I mean, Duke definitely, but North Carolina also. You know, when they're not playing Duke.
So Walker Kessler's a player that I'm probably the most excited about outside of Jabari, and maybe even include, because like with Jabari, I kind of know what my expectations of Jabari might be too high, in that I'm expecting him to be just a head better than everybody else on the court. Well, Walker could be an interesting player.
With Jabari, I'm just kind of going in with, I think it'll be good. I just try to have no expectations and see what happens.
Right.
I think I'm with you. Walker's the guy that I wanted real bad when we jumped in there sort of towards the end of his recruitment and got a visit, got him on campus, and eventually he ended up at North Carolina. I'm excited about that as well.
So we got an exhibition next Friday. Who's, are y'all going to this game?
I'll be there.
Yeah, I'm probably going to be there.
Against Southern Illinois?
Indiana.
Southern Illinois, the Salukis, correct?
Yeah.
Yes.
But this is Southern Indiana.
Brandon Jacobs alum.
So Southern Indiana, I don't know one thing about them except I have in the show notes that was Bruce's first team to head coach.
Indeed. Yep.
He won a national championship there.
Indeed he did.
I think it was 1995. I remember that because I remember after the Kentucky game 2020 at Lexington, he flew to Evansville for the 25-year anniversary of that title. They honored that team after they played Kentucky that day, because we played Kentucky early that afternoon. This was like a couple weeks before COVID shut everything down.
Right.
And so but I think it was 95. It was like 95, 96 they won. He won national championship there.
Ryan, what were you doing in 1995?
During March Madness of 1995, I literally was being born.
Traveling down a birth canal is what I would
More or less, during the first round of the 1995 NCAA tournament.
Let me tell you.
That's probably right.
Fall of 1995, I was feeling a lot like I'm feeling now about them Dallas Cowboys. feeling like 95 around here.
Yeah, and March of 95. You know what? I don't think I was really into college basketball that much at that point. So I was more of an NBA guy still around that time. And
oh, for sure, Shaq was playing for the Magic, and it was the greatest thing in the world.
I think 97 is really the first tournament that I followed. Of course, Bruce wasn't playing in the big tournament. He's playing in the D2 tournament.
1995, I believe, speaking of being more into the NBA back then, I was super into the NBA. And the 1995 Dallas Mavericks, I'm looking this up now, but if I remember correctly, they won. No, that was the year. They won 26 games. They were 26 and 56.
95 was the Rockets, right?
They were terrible.
95 and the Rockets when they won?
Yeah. Yeah, this is the Mavs, though, that they had the Triple J's, and everyone, even though they were terrible, everybody was like, oh, this team's going to be really good. And then Tony Braxton broke up the Dallas Mavericks.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So Tony Braxton, if you don't know, was dating, I believe, Jim Johnson, one of the Triple J's. Jim Jackson. And then had an affair with him, or cheated on him with Jason Kidd. This is all alleged. And...
oh, is this casual libel?
No, this is pretty well-known NBA rumors. And then that was... both of those guys got so mad at the other one that they basically had to trade both guys. And so it broke up the Mavericks. And, they were left with just Jamal Mashburn. And they got those guys because they were so bad, Chief, that in 1993-94, they won fewer games than the Dallas Cowboys. The Mavericks won 13 games.
The Cowboys won like 17 games.
The Cowboys won the Super Bowl, and the Mavericks won 13 games. All right. Guys, over under, we didn't ask we should have asked to Fur when he was on here, so I'm going to ask it to Will. Over under, who has more wins, Georgia football or Georgia basketball this year?
I'm going to go football.
Because they might get 14 football. Football might get 14 wins.
I'm going to go football.
They'll probably get 14, but they're not getting 15.
Right.
No.
As long as the Braves finish the job either tomorrow or Wednesday night, they're not getting 15.
Oh, see, I'm afraid it might be the other way around.
Yeah, I think I'm with Ryan here.
The Braves can do it. There's nothing that can stop this Georgia team.
There's no curses anymore in the world.
Ugh. All hope.
All of a sudden, the Falcons will go on some miracle run.
Gee, no. No, there's still Georgia sports. The Braves can still win, and Georgia will still. See, the Braves have actually won a title in the intervening years since Georgia last won one. In fact, it had been 15 long years since Georgia won a title when the Braves last won a title. So,
hello again, 1995.
And now we're 26
years.
6 years from that point, so that means third. Almost 40 years? Is that what we're looking at here? 41 years.
A little past that, G.
Yeah, 41. Yeah. Man.
Interesting.
That is interesting. Interesting topic we've stumbled on there.
But I think
you guys have discovered this before.
I think Friday night will be good for Auburn. I think Southern Indiana is always a pretty good D2 team. I don't know probably anything about them either, honestly. I know sometimes these exhibition games can be a lot closer than we expect them to, or we may lose them.
Shout out to Barry College.
Hello, Barry. You know, but I've seen a lot of teams. You know, they've had some really close games with in their exhibition games so far this season. I know Arkansas had a close game with a D2 school. UAB had one. Texas A&M had one tonight. And in exhibition games, they don't really matter in the grand scheme of things, and people read way too much into them. But it'll be good for them to see this team live and in person and playing another team.
Yeah, so it's less about seeing what the score is and more about seeing what these individual players can do, because most of this roster we don't really know. We haven't seen them, and especially in person. I mean, all these younger guys, you know, Dylan Cardwell, Chris Moore, I mean, even if you're somebody that goes to these games, you missed it last year.
The
students missed it last year.
It's a good way. This is exactly like friendlies in professional soccer. It's not really about the end result. It's about getting match fitness, as they say. It's getting you up to speed. It's getting you. You cannot simulate a game in practice, no matter how many times you, no matter what you do to try to do that. Even that scrimmage against UCLA or UCLA, UAB wouldn't have been full on like a game. And this is like a game. It is a game. It gets you in the mode of playing a game, 40 minutes in a gym, and that's really all it's about. It's just about getting in the groove, getting in shape, in real game shape, and getting ready for that actual real first game.
I'm just excited for the Jungle to be able to interact with Dylan Carwell for the first time since he didn't get to do it last year. That's one of the things I'm most excited about. And as much as he's into it at football games and the whole basketball team for that matter, that place needs to be rocking for him and that whole basketball team, because they've been front and center at these football games, and it's been fun to watch.
It will be. I there's no doubt in my mind that it's going to be crazy, because there's going to be so many kids that are sophomores now that didn't actually get to go to a game last year. And I imagine it's going to be even crazier than that first football game was going to be, or was this year. So
I think, Will, what is your vibe in terms of this team versus the rest of the conference at this point? Would you had to put a number on it. Is this a top five team in this league? Is this a top two team in this league? Is this the best team in this league? Top 10 team in this league?
I've got Auburn third in the league. I've got Kentucky first, Arkansas second, and then I've got Auburn third. I really think Kentucky's going to bounce back this year. They really went out and addressed a lot of the issues they had last year in the transfer portal. They have Ty Washington, they added him and a couple other freshmen. Washington's a guy Auburn was really high on too before he ended up at Lexington. I really like what Eric Musselman's doing in Fayetteville. So I have the Hogs at two. That place is going to be rocking too. And I've got Auburn at three. A lot of people have Auburn in the 4-6 range, so I'm a little higher on Auburn than most folks. But I think that there's six or seven teams that can honestly win this league this year. The league is going to be really, really good. There's really not going to be any nights in the league, maybe unless you're playing Georgia. And I hopefully don't ever regret saying that. But it's going to be a tough game. There's just a lot of good teams in this league. And I've got Auburn third at preseason. So.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Okay. All right, Ryan, let's take a quick commercial break. We're at 31 minutes and 39 seconds in this podcast. And we're back. I think, Will, the main thing, non-conference play with one-and-done players oftentimes is kind of the testing point, I don't know, preseason in a lot of ways. But I think most famously in my mind, the South Alabama game was kind of most people's introduction to Isaac Okoro as, hey, he's the best player on the court. And this guy's not going to be here much longer. Like, at that point, I think most people thought, oh, yeah, we don't get him next year. Do you see a similar thing with Jabari early on? Like, you think we're going to see more of a slow burn with Jabari, where he's going to take a couple of games to get used to college basketball? Or is it going to be more of like game two of the year, it's going to be fairly obvious that he's better than everybody else?
I think it might take a game or two. I know, like, with the South Alabama game, that was kind of their the big Isaac Okoro moment. I think I'm looking at the battle for Atlantis, honestly, around Thanksgiving. I think that's going to be the time that Auburn's going to, you know, the country's going to know about Jabari Smith. And, you know, they've got a heck of a first-round game with UConn. That's going to be one of the best games of that week. There's so many good tournaments and stuff around Thanksgiving. But that Auburn-UConn game Wednesday afternoon is going to be a lot of fun. And, you know, a chance to play, then play a Loyola, Chicago, Michigan State. And then they may get a chance to play Baylor or Syracuse. So that three games over that Thanksgiving, I think, is kind of Jabari Smith's going to be Jabari Smith's coming out party. So
now we're talking.
I think these first couple games, you know, it'll be good to get everybody acclimated. And I feel feel pretty comfortable that they're going to go 3-0 before they head out there to the Bahamas. So,
are you going to the Bahamas for Thanksgiving, Will?
I wish. I am going to Tampa for the USF game the Friday before the trip to Bahamas.
So now we're talking, Will.
I will get you halfway there. Just keep going.
Yeah. Tampa. Why go to the Bahamas round when you can go to Tampa?
That's what I'm saying. You're already in Tampa. You may as well just
keep driving.
Go out of Miami, get a boat.
Drive to the Bahamas.
I think Lindiana James had thought about doing that. You know, because they loved it. They love a cruise.
That's true. They do love a cruise. But
that was
could James do what we talked about this on the podcast, that these basketball tournaments in luxury locations like the Bahamas have got to be the hardest marriage sell of all time, because you can start out with the sale of, hey, we can go to the Bahamas, guys. She might be interested. Then you say,
spend all day in the gym.
What if we spend all day in the gym watching
also,
college basketball?
Also, I think the deal breaker there would have been the Iron Bowl was on Saturday, right? So,
yeah, especially this year because Auburn's going to win it, which brings us to college football. Chief, as the one person on this podcast who has correctly picked Auburn to be in the driver's seat of the SEC West at this point of the season.
Yep.
How does it feel to be so right?
You get used to it.
Yeah.
He probably feels about as good as you do for being the biggest Bo Nix stan on the...
Yeah. You know, I've been saying it for years since that Oregon game. This kid's got something special.
Yeah, you've been leading the charge for his fan club.
I mean, I think...
Trying to get registered.
The problem with me and Bo Nix is I think I was in denial of what I was witnessing. I think I was in denial that I was witnessing the most Auburn quarterback who could ever exist.
Oh, I think also you've seen him under a regime that was just a dying regime, and I think it really hindered Bo. It really hurt his performance. So, I don't think there's anybody on this podcast that thinks that he couldn't come out Saturday and just lay an absolute egg.
That's why he's the Auburn quarterback. Chief,
but I don't know at what point we start believing that he's going to play good from now on.
Like
I guess he has to win the rest of these games.
Do you remember the article? I think it was Jason Kirk did an article where he basically used preseason AP poll rankings versus final AP poll rankings to show which team is the most consistently overrated versus which team is the most consistently underrated. And as you might imagine, like Notre Dame and Texas are consistently overrated. But then he said, in researching this, I realized that nobody ever has a clue of where Auburn is going to finish. Like, Auburn is the most chaotic. Like, sure. It doesn't matter where you start off the year.
Top five most overrated and underrated.
Yeah, they were top five most overrated and underrated. He's like, that doesn't make any sense unless no one has a clue. And
this is why Auburn fans cringe when they see a single digit preseason for Auburn too.
But there have been years in which Auburn was preseason highly ranked and finished highly ranked. 2004 Auburn, I think, was 16th and finished top five. But 2010, what was that? I think the 22nd and finished number one overall. 2014, Auburn finished pretty highly ranked. They didn't finish as highly as they started, but they finished pretty highly ranked.
2013 started unranked.
Well, that's the big one. 13 is the one that's like, they weren't ranked at all. No, it's, I think Bo is that. Bo's that guy. He is that as a person. If anybody who can say.
He's lived it just like we have.
Right. But nobody can say, I know for a fact Bo Nix is going to eat on Saturday. That person's a crazy person. Nobody knows what's going to happen on Saturday. Least of all, Bo Nix.
For the record, Auburn started at 17th in 2004. Then dropped to 18th before shooting up to 14th and then, just moving on up from there. So,
what were we in 07? That was the preseason 07 and 0. Because those Tuberville years after 04,
they were always just kind of top 10-ish. We were like 2 or three or whatever it was.
And yeah, that was the bad one because we finished unranked, I believe. But like
18th in 07.
Yeah.
07 18th. What was the year
we got up to top 10 before that LSU game?
Yeah, we were number two in the country when we got beat by Arkansas and Gus Malzahn.
10th and 08.
10th? 08, gosh. So
yeah, and then just bombed out.
Because the defense should have been ranked 10th. You know,
to your point, that is Bo Nix to this point at Auburn. I think, you know, if he can go to Texas A&M this weekend, then I will sort of relax a little bit and think, okay, maybe he's got it all. He's figured it all out.
No, this is the real test. I think
this is his real the realest of a test that he's gotten since he's under new management.
This is him.
And it's going to be up to him because this A&M defense is solid against the run. I mean, that's kind of what they thrive on. And they aren't going to give up a ton of big pass plays either. So this is going to have to be Bo making accurate passes, you know, being consistent with it.
Yeah.
And taking what they give them.
On Twitter, I responded to something that a friend of the podcast, Rogue Booster, Justin Ferguson wrote that Bo Nix is on a hero's journey, like a Joseph Campbell style hero's journey.
Yeah, yeah.
And that him being benched against Georgia State was he had to go through this abyss in order to come out the other side and understand where he is.
That was his Gam Jabbar.
Exactly. So this is the abyss. So now after that, he's gone through the abyss. He has to go through what's called the supreme ordeal. He's gone through this second threshold area of the Joseph Campbell hero. If you haven't read Here with Many Faces, do yourself a favor. It's fantastic.
It's inspired basically everything you ever consumed media-wise.
You'll probably ruin movies for a while, especially Disney movies.
Well, also
but
the thing about it is it's not just it that ruined it. That has inspired it. It's just that the thing that it talks about is just in.
It's baked into what it is to be a human being.
Yes.
Is to crave stories that have this format, and he kind of goes through why that is, and so. And this is a quote from a Medium article about the hero's journey. And it says the second threshold, which is where I believe Bo Nix is, in this Texas A&M game. Is this
for Dune fans? He's gotten his first real hit of the spice,
right?
At this point,
if you're in,
let's not talk about Auburn players hitting spice.
Well, it's a melange, okay?
Right.
Name, okay?
Okay, so there has to be some sort of overly traumatic event that the hero has himself had a hand in, which guys was. Him almost losing Georgia State and coming out the other side. So now this has sparked the seed of his true moral and divine soul to be reborn. He has risen from the ashes as a phoenix, but he still has to go through.
He's the Kwisatz Haderach.
What'd you say?
He's the Kwisatz Haderach.
Exactly. So now he has to go out. He has to go out, find hope in himself and in his quest. He has his companions around him. Because you have to have companions in a hero's journey.
Who's his Stilgar? Who do we think?
I don't know. I'm thinking the true hero, like the most, if you look, read a hero's journey, like
Brian Harsin
book is The Lion King. Like The Lion King is like, it just is tracks. It's like they wrote it with the Joseph Campbell book next to it as they write in the script.
Is Gus the Duke in this analogy?
Gus is Duke.
Lost the Merlin story.
Yeah.
So spoilers. At some point, he has to go do it by himself.
60-year-old book.
The time comes where Bo Nix has to leave his companions that have gotten him this far. He has to do it all on his own. And at that moment,
Chad Morris is Duncan Idaho.
Are this all Dune comparisons? I haven't seen it, nor read the book. I think this is it. I think this is the game.
If you read it, you'd be like, did this guy just take Joseph Campbell and just make it a book?
Right. But which I think that Star Wars did too.
When was Hero of Many Faces written?
Before the first Star Wars.
Right. But I don't know if it was written before the first Dune.
Oh, it may not have been.
65 is when Dune came out. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
1949.
Okay.
So, all
right. Well, wait.
So Frank Herbert.
He was. Right. I think he was Hero lecturing at Notre Dame at that point still. Joseph Campbell was. So anyway, I believe that currently Bo Nix's Auburn season, really Auburn career, is tracking on a Joseph Campbell's hero's journey. And we're going to continue to track that here at the Orange and True podcast. Because if he beats Texas A&M, what leaves, what then would come into being is a hero returning home, mastering the journey. And we all know what that means in the end game.
Yeah, he's going to be riding a sandworm.
No, it means he's going to beat Alabama again,
yeah,
Chief.
Yeah, exactly.
That somehow Bo Nix is going to have a 2-1 record against Nick Saban in Alabama.
Is he going to marry Kristen Saban, though? I don't know if that... Anyway, spoilers for anybody that's not read or watched Dune. What I'm saying is I need a Photoshop of him with blue eyes after we beat Texas A&M this weekend. Like, but all blue. The eyes of the abad.
I think the interesting thing about this game, to take it back completely to sportsy, is...
Oh, sorry.
We talked about this in the Slack a little bit, or I did. Like, the thing that worries me is that against the last two games, like, everyone kind of lumped these three games together, Arkansas, Ole Miss, Texas A&M. And that was kind of like this, like, okay, if you can be 2-1, or at worst, if you can be at worst 2-1, this is going to be a really good Auburn season. But I think people didn't realize that, like, Arkansas and Ole Miss are a clear tier in terms of recruiting talent below Texas. Texas A&M is recruited extremely well. They have a much better team than Auburn does on paper. Like, Auburn is not going to be able to just out-athlete Texas A&M the way they did Arkansas. Arkansas didn't have anything for a lot of guys on Auburn's defense. Texas A&M will. They've got...
In the overall composite, Texas A&M is number 8 on 24/7 as far as composite talent. Auburn, number 14.
Yeah. So
where's LSU?
LSU's probably top 5.
LSU is number 5.
Yeah, because the difference is
Arkansas 28, Ole Miss 27.
Jimbo hasn't completely had a team that's quit on him, and I believe the coach might have.
I don't think they completely quit until about halfway through our game, though.
Derek Stingley might have.
No, it's true.
He's not playing for them anymore.
Florida.
They didn't quit against Florida.
Can we talk about how bad this team kind of was at the beginning of the season, though?
No, that's
Texas A&M.
Yes. That's the thing. This team is very confusing.
Scored 10 points against Colorado, and that is not a good Colorado team.
Everyone thought Colorado was back. Like, that was – they did so poorly against Colorado that everyone was then picking Colorado to win the Pac-12.
It's not a bunch of freshmen either, so that's not an excuse. They lost their quarterback, who'd sucked for 3 years and was finally decent last year.
And they lost a lot of offensive line talent, I believe.
Okay. Well, that hurts.
Yeah. So, and I think I think they lost a lot of guys to the NFL on the offensive line.
All right. Yeah, I remember the game last year in Auburn, we talked about the A&M offensive line just absolutely just mauling us and how much better.
Because one thing that Jimbo has done and his predecessor did was recruit offense and defensive line pretty heavy. Yeah. They signed a ton of guys, I believe. I'm not the recruiting expert, but I believe they kind of prioritized those two positions fairly heavily.
I mean, that's what you got to do to win.
Like, defensive line, they seem to always have like a Myles Garrett type guy. Like, there's always just some defensive lineman at A&M that's, since I was a kid, that's like this super stud. Everyone talks about him being some incredible defensive lineman. I don't think they've got that going on this year.
A&M, talk up something that's there. It's the best thing that ever existed.
But they're usually right about defensive linemen for some reason.
That's true.
This year, they're right about their tight end. He is very good.
I mean, by the numbers, he's the best in the country, right?
Great tight end name to Jalen Weidermeyer. Weidermeyer? Weidermeyer?
Yeah, I would say that's probably Weidermeyer. They're really.
He's got 25 catches for 353 yards this year, 4 touchdowns.
That's not great for Auburn.
No, it's really bad for Auburn.
But you know what is great for Auburn? Owen Papo looks healthy.
Yes.
And he's probably going to have this assignment this week.
Yes.
He better be real heavy, healthy.
Yeah, have OP back. We have two of the best linebackers in the conference. So that's good.
Like Crow was talking about with, you know, making your third best player great in basketball earlier. Auburn might have the best third linebacker in the conference as well with Chandler Wooten.
Chandler Wooten.
Right. Awesome.
And Smoke Monday's not a bad linebacker either.
Sure. Person to watch out for is, in my opinion, Isaiah Spiller. I think a lot of other running backs in the country have gotten a ton more pub than Isaiah Spiller. I think he's really good. Auburn's going to have to really – he's already almost got 1,000 yards this year. Auburn's going to have to really key on Isaiah Spiller because he can flat out fly. If you get if you let him get past your first level, it's a track meet.
He's involved in the passing game too. He's got, yeah, I think, 21 catches or so this year. Huh. So they're going to try and get him out in space. Again, that's going like to be that. Jacoby McClain and Owen Papo having to get out on the flats to get to him.
So here's a question, Ryan.
Running backs are really good.
Their defense, you have here on the notes that their defense basically doesn't give up any big plays ever. But they give up some tiny plays.
So they kind of avoid the big play. I mean, kind of what we've seen from Auburn at times this year. You can get yards on them. And they're not going to come in and rack up a bunch of sacks. You're not going to turn the ball over a lot. But it's hard to score on them. They're only giving up 16 points a game. So that's going to be a challenge. Auburn getting to the red zone. They've looked pretty good down there the last couple weeks. I think kind of the not realization, but probably giving in to running Bo in the red zone has helped.
Okay, here's my theory on that, Ryan. This is no one's talking about this, but my theory on why is Bo Nix all of a sudden running more? I think the coaches realize that TJ Finley isn't that bad. I think in the past, our head coach may have been a little bit afraid of our starting quarterback gets hurt, we're going to lose every game. And I think now Harsin and Bobo realize, okay, TJ Finley can actually do some stuff. If we need him to come in and play, it isn't an automatic loss like it was in many years under the last regime. If your backup quarterback came in, it was go ahead and chalk that one up into an L. Let's move on.
I
think Bo's freed up because they're confident that they are not going to just take a huge step back if he goes out of the game.
That could definitely be part of the equation there. I think a lot of it is they realize that Harsin wants to win right now, and to do that, they realize they've got to cut Bo loose a little bit. Also, I mean, it's just like, why keep a weapon that you have holstered? Like,
right.
This is not a wrestling match. This is a gunfight. And if you got a gun, you got to shoot it. And he's definitely a gun, man.
And that quarterback sweep play they've been running is pretty guaranteed to get a first down or a touchdown at this point. Yeah. Like, it's great.
They're setting up some fun things with that. I mean, I think it's been mostly Sean Shivers coming in motion across the formation of those plays. But and I don't think this was the same setup from the Penn State game with Kobe Hudson, but I could see him getting a chance again out of a similar formation like that to take the reverse and potentially throw the ball.
I don't know if anybody else noticed this, and we'd have to consult with the nerd because I know he's watched back all of the, like, every play of the game. Sean Shivers is in on every single third down.
He every is single. The third down back.
He's the only back like we that watched, gets a third down snap.
It's like we watched Darren Sproles play a bunch. And it's like, hey, that's what we're going to do.
Yeah, more or less.
He and can't quite catch the ball as well as Darren Sproles. But,
but it works.
That's definitely the model for him right now.
Ryan and I also noticed Saturday night, he was lined up outside wide receiver a lot. There was a lot out. He was out there.
Usually he came in motion, but not every play.
Yeah, not every time. He caught a pass. He caught a pass, and I'm not smart enough to know what each wide receiver position is, but he's lined up in the one just to the inside of the outside receiver. Is that the slot?
Well, not every time though. He has played on the far end, like a couple steps away from the sideline.
Oh, okay. He caught one out of the slot.
He did
at least once during that game.
Oh, and there was another formation that I can't remember what we ended up running out of it. I think it was a third down where Shivers was the running back and Tank came in almost like lining up as an H-back, kind of tight end H-back spot. It was down in the red zone for the first half, but they're definitely putting a lot of stuff on film right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's the joke about every coach says they're going to be multiple on offense and, you know, aggressive. But Harsin really is doing that. I mean, he's running so many different formations so far this year that it's got to be a nightmare to cut film for this team right now.
I like it. It's good.
Yeah, I think
the guy we're about to play, I have zero respect for.
I know.
I don't think that their team is Chief. That good. And I think that we'll beat them. And I think that he's going to be very angry. And it'll be fun to see.
Chief thinks that Jimbo Fisher is the Rick Barnes of Rick Barnes.
He is the Rick Barnes of college football.
Hey, what if Jimbo Fisher hired Jeremy Pruitt as a defensive coordinator next year?
No, he's gonna hire some guy with a monkey, it looks like. And that's gonna be Washington State.
They're about to fire somebody. No, Texas is rather. But.
Texas will fire a guy with a monkey. Washington State might hire him.
Man alive. Jimbo, I don't know. He's fine. It's just that I don't think that I would never want him within 10 miles of my own school, because I just don't think that he I don't think he has it together. I think last year was a complete fluke, like total complete fluke, that Texas A&M team was the fifth best team in the country. And now most of their talent from that team is gone, but yet we're supposed to believe they're good now because they got it together and beat Alabama. I have this strong feeling that he did the Lane Kiffin plan where he spent the entire offseason planning for that Alabama game. And it worked for him because he has way more talent than Lane Kiffin does. I kind of think he does want to beat Auburn. Like, not obviously he wants to beat Auburn, but I think he definitely, because we've beat them in situations where we kind of ruined their season several times since he's been there. And that probably sticks in his crawl a bit. Also, I think he's probably wanted to coach here at least once in the past. And I don't think that we tried to get him to. So he'd probably like to shove it up several people here's rear.
Also, the fact that Auburn has never lost in College Station as an SEC team, too. Probably tired of your mouth as well.
Someone who's very afraid of jinxes, that scares me a little bit, but, you know, whatever.
No such thing as curses, Chief.
Well, you know, every time Everton plays anybody, a guy who has never scored a goal in the Premier League before or hasn't scored in, 48 games or is returning from a broken leg and's been out for 2 years. They always, every single time they score, happened today, every single time, and so I'm a little gun shy.
Counterpoint: Auburn beat LSU in Baton Rouge this year.
It's true. Yeah. True. 99 is done.
So it's basically like when Ryan talks about teams that don't shoot the three very well.
Oh, Jesus. Yes, exactly like that.
Pretty much.
Dude. Exactly like that. Yeah. Ryan, how's A&M at shooting threes?
They're pretty bad on the basketball court this year. So.
Sweet. I hate their coach.
They do have to come to Auburn this year. Oh, boy. They seem to always get it together when they come to Auburn Arena, but we'll see.
I can't wait to see how their coach goes out to almost other free throw line.
Jimbo going to be out at the midfield during kickoff?
Arguing with the ref.
I'll throw the curse up there. Texas A&M, 87th in the country in turnover rate for their defense. So
we're going to turn it over 18 times.
But they also, and their coach, their quarterback has thrown a pick in every game but one. It was the only game that he didn't play the whole game.
Yep. seven picks in eight games.
I can't wait.
I'm starting to think, so in all seriousness, it does feel like we have just kind of slowly built some momentum this year and building on each win.
Feeling good, having fun.
Yeah, starting to believe, you know, Bo's on a little bit of a hot streak here where he's played well every game since that Georgia State game. So even though we lost to Georgia, he still had a decent game in that game. He didn't do anything to really lose it for us there. I'm really hoping he comes out and has another great game this week and we win.
So no,
I mean, if he does, we
really
win.
Talked about it, but and maybe this is me cursing it here.
No,
I think people will talk about it after this week. If Auburn were to win the game, Auburn were to win the game,
yes,
that sets up a more than likely a winner take all Iron Bowl the SEC West.
Don't write off Mississippi State just yet.
Don't write off an 11-8
because Auburn. As long as they go 2-1 over the next 3 weeks, that's still a winner-take-all Iron Bowl. Because Alabama has an SEC loss, Auburn only has one right now.
Georgia.
So if Auburn has two SEC losses going into the Iron Bowl, you know, people haven't said anything about it yet, but I'll go ahead and do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you would have to be A&M or A&M's going.
No, A&M has two SEC losses.
Oh.
Yeah.
But you still have to
three
because
two,
of Klinga.
Two.
Because of Klinga.
That's right.
I'm
more worried. Honest to God, I'm more worried about that Mississippi State game than this Texas A&M.
Well, it's just looking at matchups. I mean, not necessarily the quality of the team, but matchup wise, this A&M game is a better matchup for Auburn than Mississippi State is.
Yeah, I don't like all those 5-yard passes. Because two of those is a first down.
Yeah, most people, most Auburn folks didn't get to see Kentucky, Mississippi State. I mean, I didn't see it, but I did see the box score. At one point, I believe the state quarterback was 34 or 37.
Man.
Look, yeah. I know I'm always the skeptic of all these SEC teams that are supposed to be good. So, you know, it may just be a blind squirrel finding a nut here, but I tried to tell y'all about that Kentucky team.
You did. I know.
Eventually, a team without a single 4 or 5 star will eventually look like a team without a single 4 or 5 star.
At some point, yeah.
I will say, maybe that's something you can be proud of for Auburn right now, is that Georgia has broken a lot of teams this year. They broke Arkansas. They broke Kentucky. I think they're going to end up breaking Florida fully. Auburn only got stronger after that game. So,
yeah. I'm becoming a believer.
That's because it was a trial, Ryan. It's part of the hero's journey. He had to go through that.
Ryan. It's pronounced believer.
A believer.
Begum Jabbar. It was the desert. It was crossing the desert, Ryan.
The opposite of a hero's journey, by the way, is Mad Max. There's no one learns a lesson. It is. Well, he goes A to B.
So does every journey require a desert? Is that what I mean?
No.
Well, I'll be riding sandworms soon, Ryan. Don't you worry.
All right. That sounds
gross. Or euphemistic.
Well, knowing Frank's later work, maybe.
All right, we'll see you guys next week. We've gone for an hour. That seems good enough for me. If you're still listening, why don't you go throw us a like or a subscribe on iTunes?
Bro, we got to do this at the top of the show.
No, I like it right here. For those people who are committed, you're already here. You might as well just go review it. Say, hey, you know what?
Yeah, love us.
The last 2 minutes of the show is the best. Make sure you stay to the very end. I'm reaching out right now into my microphone. Put your hand out, and we're creating the largest chain in the world. 1, 2, 3, 4. You can feel me, feel you. Have a wiggle weekend.